Mini episode 95 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Royalty Tours USA, your ultimate resource to traveling in style to attend sporting events. Follow them on the web at royaltytours.blogspot.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Okay, everybody, it is part five. We're going to be past the halfway point here. The nine-part Kyle Ross History of WrestleMania anthology. It's Rick Morris and Kyle Ross here in the FDH Lounge.
Which at the current rate could be over by WrestleMania 29.
Yes. Ken Burns' miniseries have nothing on us here.
No, they don't. Yes. We'd see that music, that folksy music.
Yeah. We're up to something easily as tragic, I think anybody would agree, as the Civil War, that being WrestleMania 9.
Yes.
Nice,
yes.
Ken Burns analogy.
Yeah, both
there.
The North and South lost here.
Yeah.
I think, yes. So much so they shipped it out west.
Yes. I'm not sure who was the blue and who was the gray, but it was the fan sensibilities that were getting massacred here.
Oh,
Kyle
yes,
Ross.
Thank you. Yes.
Yes. WrestleMania 9, arguably the worst of all time.
I don't believe arguably. I believe is the worst.
It was,
which, by the way, you know, just for those keeping score at home, I always like to do this.
Yeah.
Of the first nine WrestleManias, mm-hmm. I have seven of them rated, or pardon me, six of them rated in the bottom 10. Seven in the average group, eight in the good group, and then three up on the top pedestal.
Yeah. This one, not very good from a macro level. Let's start there.
It was bad. Look, and I think it's important to note, you and I did a podcast, I remember vaguely.
On mid-90s wrestling,
yeah.
92 to 96,
and
we covered this
yeah,
a lot.
Yeah, we hit this show a lot.
Yeah.
So we're not going to spend a lot of time on it.
No.
Because it's one of those universal things that everyone agrees this show sucked. It kicked off what had already started the last couple months, a bad period. And here's the thing about this WrestleMania.
Right.
Okay, you talk macro.
Yeah.
Going in, this show is going to suck badly. Okay, it had nothing interesting on it at all. The main event was certainly, of the first nine WrestleManias, the least appealing.
Well, this was the post-star power era.
Yeah, I mean, Hogan had left and come back for the show.
He was a late re-entry, but yeah.
Because they realized, oh my God, no one is going to buy this.
Flair was gone. They did the Loser Leave Town match.
That's unbelievable.
They should have held that.
Yeah, why not? I don't know why you don't hold that off for this show.
Yeah.
God bless America.
What was the hurry in getting rid of them? Yeah.
Yeah, on TV, free TV?
Jesus. TV, yeah. I know they were trying to establish Raw, but still.
Yeah. This show was going to suck going in, and the boneheaded booking decision, which had they gone through what they actually were looking to do, we'll talk about it in a minute, would have been okay, but it's made worse by a boneheaded booking decision. I don't mind the venue. I thought the venue was okay, actually.
Right.
On the History of WrestleMania DVD, they actually spent a great deal of time talking about the production setup at Caesar's Palace. Again, we talk about the first several WrestleManias all having kind of a separate identity. When I think WrestleMania 9, I think two things. Atrocious booking and Caesar's Palace.
Yeah.
So
it was a cool setting.
It was cool. I mean, it's unique. It's a small setting, but they probably needed it given the level of interest. I mean, I talked about that. I think the drop off in interest from WrestleMania 8 to WrestleMania 9, the greatest between any two WrestleManias there was.
I think it probably was. They had made, as we talked about in our previous mini episode, we were talking about mid 90s wrestling, the most abrupt world title change in the expansion era. That ever since the belt went on Hogan in 84, there was nothing even close to what they did in the fall of 92, putting it on Bret Hart. I talked about it in our last mini episode. Yeah, okay, Bret was being built for that, but
I was shocked when they came on the syndicated programs and said he'd won it on a house show in Saskatoon.
Right.
And I was like, what? Bret Hart's the world champion?
Right.
Now, behind the scenes, Savage had flopped after winning it at WrestleMania 8.
Right.
They wanted to turn the Warrior heel. He balked, wound up leaving the company. And Vince, for whatever, it just soured on Flair.
Yeah. That. Well, keep in mind, too, They had to get the belt off of Flair at that time because he had that chip in his inner ear that
dislodged. Yeah.
And he able to come back quicker than they thought, but you couldn't have a world champion who was down for a period of time. So the belt was on Brett. They did him no favors just throwing him into the fray. He was not perceived as a top-level world champion the way that other guys were because people were not conditioned to think of him in that way. I mentioned to you off-air that I was heartened to hear when I was listening to an old SNS, the little guy say something that I've said a lot of times off-air, which is, and I might have said it in that mid-90s one, the perfect way to have done it would have been somebody passes the torch to him, say Savage at WrestleMania 9. They didn't want to go another 6 months of Randy Savage on top, apparently.
No, because things were not – he was a bad champion.
Yeah, so they had to do something, but Bret Hart was victimized by the way that it went and ended up being the scapegoat because Hulk Hogan was the shiny chew toy that came back into the viewing range of Vince McMahon here before this show.
Well, in many ways, like a John Cena. Okay, yeah. Who we're going to get when we get to the end of this thing. Okay,
right.
And obviously all the current fans know this. Bad position. You know, he's the main guy after a huge boom period.
Right.
So he's in a bad spot to begin with, done no favors, not really given a true blood feud right off the rip.
Right.
You know, he was pushed as – they did do a good job, I thought, as push, you know, instead of like a – it was kind of a jab at Hogan, you know, the once-a-month worker. You know, Bret Hart would defend the title. You know, no one's done a busier schedule, but there was nothing to sink your teeth into. He wrestles Razor Ramon in a program that had very little intrigue to it at the Royal Rumble that same night.
Yeah.
That was the first year they officially put the number one contendership on the line in the Rumble match.
That was historic. Yeah.
The big, and it's a terrible Rumble. It's one of the worst ever. Going in, they built up, oh, Yokozuna's pretty unbeatable. You know, he's definitely the odds-on favorite to win. And then he just wins. That's not good wrestling
right.
Storytelling. And so you're left with a WrestleMania main event of Bret Hart, Yokozuna. And it clearly, of the first nine, like I mentioned, I would argue maybe ever, had probably as little intrigue for any WrestleMania event ever.
I would agree.
Because the problem was, but Yokozuna, first of all, was a hackneyed storyline. You know, it's kind of funny. We were just listening to Bill Parcells at our time with the famous, no offense to Orientals, we like to run Jap plays.
Right.
You know, the idea of the evil Japanese invader was kind of stupid anyway.
Right.
And to really make this, it didn't help that Bret Hart was Canadian. You know?
Right.
I remember, like, there was, like, this half-hearted USA chant during this match.
Right.
And, you know, even the announcers are like, Bret Hart's Canadian. You know,
they didn't even have the presence of mind to say, well, his mom's American.
In the grand scheme of things, that ain't going to help, really.
Well, the funny thing is that for as much as he's been positioned, he's really a hybrid American-Canadian. I mean, you're considered American if your mom's American.
Yeah, that's true, but I mean, he's always wore his Canadian heritage on his sleeve.
Right.
But here's the thing. Like the Rumble where Yokozuna was presented as, and they did do this half-hearted the contract signing Yokozuna bonds, I dropped him, but I mean it was like a
generic
contract
signing, dominant heel tries.
Yeah, it was kind of like the match already. It was just like, God, like, oh wow.
It was a grab bag of bad cliches that they just applied to this match.
Yeah, and here's the worst thing though. Okay, you want to put Bret over? Why doesn't he go over in this match? To me, the idea of him losing, I mean, him losing to Yokozuna does him no favors. Yokozuna was presented as his overwhelming odds-on favorite.
Right.
You know, they were talking, Gene Okerlund, bless his soul, okay? You know, in the casinos, they're betting Yokozuna right now. That is tremendous. Okay, that is unbelievable.
That's a wonderful line.
That is unbelievable to play into Vegas. Okay, man. And I guess we just go on right now. All right. Obviously, I don't know when the decision was made, how the decision was made. I know what they were going for originally, and it didn't pan out. And it should be noted that that makes this WrestleMania worse, the fallout. The fallout, because obviously Hogan came back. He was involved in a really crappy the match itself is horrific. It's a negative star affair.
And they let it go 18-27.
I love how you're always with the times. Well, you've got it all.
Yeah.
But him and Beefcake against Money, Inc. for the tag belts.
Right.
And since they weren't going to be a regularly touring team, they, of course, do some awful DQ finish.
It was, which, by the way, we talked about Money Inc. at WrestleMania 8 also retaining via, you know, Extreme Screwjob. So,
yeah, and Money Inc., they had lost and won the titles back from the natural disasters during the course of 82. But it's kind of funny, you know, it should have set off alarm bells. You know, Hogan, his big comeback, and he's, oh, wow, he just involved. You know, that was where the angle behind that was Money, Beefcake had the parasailing accident.
Right.
Money Inc. hit him in the face with a briefcase on an early episode of Raw. This disgusted longtime heel manager, Jimmy Hart, who,
yeah.
you know, it coaxed. It was so hideous that Hogan comes out of retirement.
Right.
In reality, bringing Hogan back was desperation because they looked at this card probably and said, oh, my God, six people are going to order this. And we're and four of them have the last name Hart, okay?
Yeah.
So Hogan obviously comes at the end after Yokozuna wins, makes an impromptu challenge, wins the belt in this two-minute match. I will say that it did kind of get the crowd over, and I would have forgiven it had the original plan on the booking sheet was do the passing the torch match that you talked about that they needed to do so badly for Bret
right.
at SummerSlam that year. Hogan was going to drop the title to Bret Hart.
Mm-hmm.
Hogan balked at doing it. And by him doing that, it makes WrestleMania 9 look really bad.
It does.
WrestleMania 9 is a show that I think when it initially happened, I wasn't interested in it at all, but I didn't automatically think worst WrestleMania ever when it happened.
And I watched the end of the main event. I remember I got to the sports bar that night after my bowling league and got there. I just was there for like the last match or so, but that's all I really cared about anyways because it was a horrific card. I remember watching it, and I was somebody that, again, I, as shocked as I was that Bret Hart was on top, I mean, even then, I was sort of like an early stage. I didn't know what smart markdom was, but
the internet had just kind of started.
Yeah,
really.
Yeah. But I mean, I liked it. I liked the change in direction. I remember I had the pink sunglasses at the time. Mm-hmm. I went to I think I got them at Survivor Series 92,
which was here at the Old Rich Show. I was at that show.
Yeah.
Maybe we were sitting next to each other. Who
great,
knows? Didn't even know.
It was a great show. I was probably the guy annoying you with my chants, and you didn't even know it. But
yes. I was cheering rapidly for Shawn Michaels to win the title. Everyone was like, "Are you really, buddy?"
Do you remember the guy in the flare robe that was at ringside? There were like people in costume at this thing.
I think I do.
Yeah.
Was
yes.
that you?
That was no.
I was like, you know, that guy did kind of look like you, Ricky.
No, but that's outstanding. But no, it was not.
No,
me.
But awesome.
I kind of wish it. Yeah, if I were to reveal that to you right now. But no, it was not me. But
that happened in a match.
Yeah. But we, so I liked
what
the
up,
whole
Don
thing.
Peterson.
Yes, yes. Don P, who, by the way, shout out, his rap career's taken off, and I think he's going to be playing a show at the House of Blues sometime soon.
Oh,
I'm due to sit down with him here on the program.
I like Don Peterson.
Yeah,
he's
great
a very good
guy.
Man.
Great guy. Love him to death. But I was buying the whole Bret Hart thing. As shocked as I was early on, I was buying
it. I wasn't, I remember.
But here's what happened. I was watching it there at, and this was at the old Harpo's, actually, on Brook Park Road. I'm watching it there that night, and then he loses, and I'm kind of bummed, and then Hogan comes in or whatever, and everybody's the happy face from the crowd, but and the announcers were selling it. And again, I was in my early post-markdom at the time where I was still trying to make sense of things, but I'm going, wow, they're like wanting us to react as though this was a year or two ago, but it's not. It's a new era. Well, it's whatever. And I was like, are people supposed to feel good at the end of the night that Bret Hart didn't have the title? I was very confused in my early postmark.
It was funny. I'll give them at least they tried some things in this period.
Right.
They thought out. You know, they knew by this point. Vince knew things were kind of going in the bad. And remember. Okay, we had not gotten to the steroid trial yet, okay, in 94.
Right.
Okay, so Vince had other things on his mind.
We were limping in that direction.
Yeah, Vince, you know, the not guilty verdict did not come until August of 94.
Right.
So he had other things on his mind. They tried some outside. Monday Night Raw was just starting here and was good. But, look, it was just gone. And, like, the Bret, it was just a bad setup. Bret tried his damnedest in the match. The match is okay, but, you know, to me, if you're trying to establish a number one babyface, he beats the monster heel. So right. it didn't – Bret Hart – and we'll get to this because this podcast we should talk about is just a two-part. It's just we're talking about two WrestleMania.
9 and 10, yeah.
This, to me, is just pooping. I'm watching my language on this podcast, by the way, for you, Ricky. Okay, after dropping two F-bombs on the last one, by the way.
Go find them, kids.
Yes, okay, yes. After just defecating on the career, this show is just – the booking committee could have easily, instead of just having this card play out, could have just brought Bret Hart in the ring and defecated on him.
Here's the thing, then
a year later, part of, and we're going to get into a big debate on WrestleMania 10, right. I understand, was kind of rewriting the wrongs of this show.
It was kind of, but here's the thing about that with Bret, and you had alluded to that you had skipped over some parts of his book. Did you read Bret Hart's critique in his memoirs of this match? Where he's been, and he's a two-time past lounge guest and, God willing, future lounge guest, but I kind of LOL'd at Brett's account of this thing, going off on poor deceased Yokozuna for screwing up the match. According to Brett, there were, like, long sequences of offense for him that were supposed to be in there. He said Yoko basically didn't remember or whatever. Yoko cut to the finishing sequence well before Bret was supposed to get in a lot of his heat sequences.
Oh, really?
That this was supposed to go.
Can I tell you something?
Yeah.
And this is going to – who are you to say this? Because Bret is usually right on a lot of things.
Okay.
His recollection –
because this was only 8:55, dude.
Yeah. I mean, his recollection is – what? This match is only 8:55?
8:55.
Are you sure Bret Hart didn't go on Wikipedia and change that?
8:55 is what Wikipedia says. Now,
I don't believe that.
I've been there in the past when the likes of Paul Belfi have gone on to Wikipedia and changed things, so I'm not going to say it couldn't have happened.
Can somebody out there in Radioland retime this? I'm going to watch. I'm actually going to I don't think that it's 8:55. I remember this being way longer.
Shout out to one of our listeners who I know is a Wikipedia mod, Bedford Crenshaw. You might want to look into that, Bedford, and see, did anybody make any changes on this recently?
If I'm wrong.
8:55, because Kyle doesn't seem to think that was the
length. I was going to say, I thought this match was like 20 minutes.
No, this was 8:55. Does that make it more plausible than when Brett's saying?
Yes, okay, now I believe Brett. I'm so sorry, Brett. I will never dispute anything you say again.
Now, here's the thing, too. How does your recollection of this match potentially, and that's all we can say, is how does it change potentially if Bret gets in a lot more heat spots, it's way more evenly contested, if it's more of a classic than it ended up being?
With Yokozuna in there, it has no chance to be a classic. Yokozuna, it was death.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
He would get so tired, it would be like the 5-minute Vulcan nerve pinch of doom.
Right.
Okay? To me, it didn't matter how hard Bret worked. To be honest, it would actually been almost more heartbreaking.
Okay.
No pun intended. No. If Bret would have worked harder. If Bret would have worked harder in here and got screwed, it would have almost been worse. Because he just gets hosed here, man. And,
right.
And I understand what they were going for. They wanted to do the... It would be interesting. If they would have done the Bret Hogan match at SummerSlam 93 that was on the books.
Yeah.
And Bret goes over and he gets the torch passed to him. And let's just say he has the exact same career.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if that elevates this from not being the worst WrestleMania ever. Or to not being the worst. You know what I'm saying?
It could affect how we look at this.
Because by that match, I'll tell you this. By that match not happening, it definitely hurts this WrestleMania.
Right.
I will say, to me, that's the only thing I focus on this WrestleMania is just how it just killed Bret Hart dead for a year.
Well, and here's the thing, too. We did a past segment on the lounge, and you were in for it. FDH's top 50 pro wrestlers of all time. I made the list out. And it was basically by drawing power and success at the box office. And I said at the time, you know, and I've always been a big Bret Hart fan, you'd have a real hard time arguing. By those standards, he was a top 10 wrestler of all time. But he's a guy where, with the right booking behind him, circumstantially, potentially could have had that kind of a career. If he had a different 1993, if he wasn't saddled the way that he was in this
and
year.
And he did have a fine feud with Jerry Lawler from a wrestling in the wrestling perspective. It was a good storyline.
Right.
Ended kind of with a dud because of Jerry's legal troubles. But, you know, he needed that big win that, you know, a lot of people talk about,
right,
whether it be Savage. He needed, you know, it's funny, he beats Ric Flair for the title, but Flair was not a WWE guy. You know,
right.
it just, man, I, to me, when an event that needed to solidify Bret Hart. And again, WrestleMania 10, they rewrite the wrongs.
Right.
And that is the event that winds up solidifying him
right.
as the top guy, although it's a year too late. It's bad, man. And Yokozuna sucked, okay?
Yeah.
I mean, I can't stress enough how if you were to list from the single belt era,
right.
you know, I'm talking about before they did the brand split
right.
thing in like 02, my least favorite world champion ever.
Yeah.
I think it's Yokozuna. He was so bad when he got the belt. He was just so bad. Like, it was so uninteresting and just like bad. A guarantee you got to get. Like, there's no world champion in history, I think, of this company.
Right.
Where you were guaranteed to have a bad match.
Right.
Guaranteed.
Well, and
I mean, it was his way. I mean, look, he's not going to move around. It was just bad.
And the funny thing is that, you know, when you look at the outcome of that show, for as much as I poop on Hulk Hogan professionally and personally these days, look, I'll admit it. When I was a kid, when I was a mark, I was into Hulk Hogan. I was into Hulkamania, you know, rah, rah, sis, boom, bah. So it's a thing. But that's what makes it more striking, and maybe that's where it started to mark an evolution in my own thinking. Because at the end of that show, it was one of those things where I was going, I'm supposed to be happy right now, but I'm really not. And I was really confused by that because they generally, I mean, those announcers, say what you will about them.
By the way, this is Jim Ross's debut with the company.
Right.
A real car crash commentary team of JR, Heenan, and Savage that did not work too well. I mean, Heenan
right.
was doing his shtick.
Right.
Jim Ross did not sell for him like Monsoon did.
Right.
Randy Savage would just like yell things randomly like he hadn't been paying attention for 5 minutes.
And I'm not gonna blame this on JR or Heenan or whatever. I don't think it wouldn't have been any different had Monsoon been in there because you know, it was all about the booking as opposed to, like, there was nothing that they could do to sell the booking. But you know what I'm talking about, the narrative. The narrative that the announcers always gave, it was like Pravda. And I would lap it up along with the rest of the fans back in the day. This was like one of the first times I could remember where it was like, they're acting like I should be real happy right now. But I'm not really that happy.
Well,
I'm kind of confused.
I think they were going, and they've done this throughout history, you know, starting with just
yeah.
like a shock move. You know, it was a dud WrestleMania going in. I think they felt
but it was
that
so unprecedented.
They just, yeah. And from that perspective, okay, it's like, you know, it was funny. When I learned the results, I didn't go to a sports bar. And those.
Mm-hmm.
My interest was waning at that point, and it was, you know, I mean, you talk about drop in interest. My level of interest going into this WrestleMania was certainly at an all-time low. When I learned that Hogan had won, I was like, what? How? Like, he wasn't in the world. Like, how does that happen? He wasn't
right.
in a world title. And they were just going for Hogan's back, and he's the champ, and wow. And it kind of worked, but the problem was, again, the fallout. He never appeared on Monday Night Raw.
Yeah.
I mean, what a slap in the face.
Well, not a live appearance anyways. They might have done some tape stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, again, anyone who criticizes me criticizing Hulk Hogan, this is the period where it got thick.
You know what it was, too? Hogan treated being champion like it was still the Superstars era, where you do your pre-tape every couple weeks or whatever. It wasn't
treated like it was his birthright.
Yeah.
Like, it was no big deal for him. Oh, yeah, I'm back. I'm the champion. That's the way it should be.
In the syndication days, it would be like, okay, you've made your appearance on your token appearance for a month or 6 weeks or whatever. He didn't quite get that Raw was a different era. I don't think any of us fully internalized how much differently it was going to be, but you're right. It was a smack in the face. They were moving towards the weekly episodic television, which, by the way, side note, as we're getting into this mid-90s period, the steroid trial was going to be upcoming. You had Jerry Jarrett that was enmeshed in the booking there. They were trying to get more episodic and weekly in the Tennessee style, in the Memphis
yes.
style. That's where Lawler, and not so much Lawler. Lawler was just on commentary at the time, but
well,
Jerry
no,
Jarrett in particular.
Yeah, he's feuding. You know, he feuded with Bret Hart.
Well, yeah. Wrestling. I meant though that he wasn't booking.
Oh, okay.
That
okay,
Jarrett
sure,
was
sure,
Jarrett
yeah.
was the only creative influence.
Yeah, but
was,
there definitely was
the
yeah, there, and you know even
yeah.
Cornette later, you know,
right.
brought in his own unique style.
Oh
so.
Yeah, yeah. There was, you know, in a full crossover later in the year with Smoky Mountain, which was like unprecedented to openly, God, of all the promotions in the world that they're going to openly acknowledge, you could have made a nice buck betting that it was going to be Smoky Mountain.
Yeah, yeah.
Although, again, they didn't perceive Smoky Mountain as a threat.
Yeah, that's probably why. You know?
They didn't even acknowledge the USWA openly. Vince would, like,
although
go to Memphis.
Although he worked with them.
But he would go there and never acknowledge it on their own TV, which was hilarious. Let's just touch on the undercard stuff here in passing. Horrible, horrible undercard. Tatanka keeping his undefeated streak going, defeated Shawn Michaels, Intercontinental Champion, by countout in 18-13.
This is the best match on the show. It is not. It's about 2 3/4. But this is like that lame booking they get themselves into now where they wanted to preserve Tatanka's undefeated streak, but he certainly was not at the caliber to be beating Shawn Michaels for a title. So, hey, let's do a big non-finish. Shawn's debut, by the way.
Yeah, that exactly. And Sherry was with Tatanka.
To be honest,
Tatanka.
This match was kind of the big...
It
was kind of a backdrop for pushing Luna attacking Sherry.
Yeah, and face Sherry, which only ever worked like right after a turn. Yeah, it was kind of a blow off.
She left pretty quick to go to WCW anyway.
The only
waste of Michaels, even though he tried, man, he tried.
Big waste. Tatanka's just too big a piece of Samsonite to be able to carry.
And you and I talked about of all the people to be getting to get a year and a half unbeaten streak in this company. What Chris Chavis ever did to deserve it, I don't know. Did he have nude pictures of Vince McMahon with a horse? I don't know.
I think they looked at his look, and I think he had the arm tassels and whatever, and they're thinking maybe like because he's an Indian, go with a warrior type character, Ultimate Warrior. I think it was an early attempt to rip off their own Ultimate Warrior thing, and it didn't work at all. He didn't have a fraction of the charisma, and he had only a... hair above work rate.
Yeah, he never had great match.
Or his work rate sucked. Steiner Brothers, one of the great tag teams of all time. Their only WrestleMania match, they defeated the Head Shrinkers at 14-22. A match that should have been better than it was.
You know,
if this was them against the Samoan SWAT team in 1990 in WCW, this might have been 3.5 stars. You know,
it's pretty close. This is not a bad match. I have nothing bad to say about this. It was what it should have been. Putting the Steiners getting a good pay-per-view win.
Shades of the Can-Ams getting the win at WrestleMania 3. This was the Steiners getting a win to set them up for the tag team
title. It was too early to put the belts on
them.
They had just debuted like three months earlier. So we got to give them a win on pay-per-view.
Yeah.
Everyone and their mother knew they would eventually beat Money Inc., which they did in June.
This was the stepping stone match. Doink the Clown defeated Crush at 8:28 as another Crush came out, and I believe
another
Doink came
this
out.
This is
and
a
there
much
was an
maligned.
Arm that
this is maligned.
I hated that feud.
Here's the problem. People think that like Crush could have been this number two babyface.
No,
I disagree, and that's why I don't care about it because I'm not one of those people.
It was awful.
I loved heel Doink, by the way. Doink was I thought tremendous. I thought it was funny when they were doing the pantomime, you know, when they were like the two links and Bobby Heenan's like, it's an illusion, you know, it's the David Copperfield. He's better than Copperfield.
Yeah.
You know, it was over the top. It was silly. It was a clown, but it was kind of a surprise. Doink drew some good. I loved heel Doink. So it was nice to see him go over.
But here's the thing.
But it's a nothing match that did a lot of harm to Crush.
Well, and that was my biggest problem with it because I never thought that much of Crush, but they did, and they ruined him.
And this didn't do him any favors.
They ruined him without making...
Because they made him look like that dumb baby face.
Right. Without making Doink into a money-drawing character in any way.
Yeah, because
you destroyed somebody without accomplishing anything.
Yeah, he kind of like had a ceiling to him in that game and turning him babyface.
Bad move.
Both guys would be in different roles by the next WrestleMania, by the way.
Right, they would be. Bob Backlund in the next match here. I would have put him in with Shawn Michaels and let Michaels go over clean. I think it could have been a good kind of a thing here to help establish Michaels as a Intercontinental Champion. Instead, he gets into a match with no program whatsoever against Razor Ramon. This was right before they ended up turning Ramon face. He wins clean at 3:45 in a match that just accomplished nothing.
Crowd kind of cheered for the heel Ramon, booed the 1993 Bob Backlund is abysmal. He sucked so bad.
They dragged it out way too long before they turned him heel. Here's a problem, though, too. As I was looking back at his career, he came in, like in the fall of 92 and didn't turn heel until late summer 94. he was on and off of TV, start and stop, the whole time.
He was bad.
There was never any
consistency. No one liked working with him at all.
Yeah. It was an anachronistic style. He was working the late 70s style. It just didn't work. Of the other matches we haven't touched on yet, this one I was telling you off here, I thought they had a chance to do so much with this. Lex Luger and Mr. Perfect, Kurt Hennig. It ends up being Luger winning the match. But, I mean, to people like me that grew up on the After Mags in the 80s, this would have been like tantamount to kind of like a dream match, kind of.
And they, you know, Luger came in. It was funny. And this was interesting. They did an angle that was kind of just forgotten about because Luger does the huge face turn in the summer.
Right.
Where Luger had attacked Bret Hart. Remember, the big angle was Luger, the loaded forearm
right.
that he hit people with.
Right.
And he had laid out Bret Hart at the WrestleMania news conference.
Yeah.
So it kind of was like, and I think we talked about this in our last podcast, that it seemed that, you know, why not just put Bret over Yokozuna and have him feud with Lex Luger in the
right.
summer? You know? And maybe it was because Henning kind of felt that he shouldn't be putting Luger over, that maybe he kind of phoned it in here.
Yeah.
Maybe that had something to do with it. But it was a crappy ending. And it was a disappointing match. There's a good brawl that happens between Michaels and Shawn Michaels and Mr. Perfect to kick off their feud
right.
after this. But it's
Narcissist was a horrible gimmick for Luger. It was a thing typical WWF of where they would pigeonhole you into a one-dimensional thing where they only wanted you to think of like one thing with the character.
Yeah, it's like because you know he's so egotistical. He just wants mirror. Yeah,
heel Luger in WCW prior to that coming in. Yeah, he was stuck up, but there were other aspects to him. This was just bad pigeonholing. Undertaker, in one of his worst WrestleMania matches, defeated Giant Gonzalez in the muscle suit by disqualification. Muscle suit with hair.
By the way.
Or fur.
The only
whatever.
Match during the streak did not win, did not actually pin him. You know, okay. It's kind of funny. You know, I mean, I guess he won,
yeah.
you know, to continue the streak, but did not get the pinfall.
Although, in... what was it?
Why does anyone cut a promo on him like that? If Undertaker's going to make these quasi-shoot remarks, oh, you're not as good as Shawn, Triple H, I believe, should come out and really get one for the smart marks. Oh, yeah, well, you won by disqualification at WrestleMania 9.
Well, this is one of two. Giant Gonzalez is one of two guys that The Undertaker did not pin at WrestleMania. I can't think of who the other one was. This is kind of a trick question.
Well, if it's a trick question, how can you not think of the answer?
Because I don't know which guy it was. Hint, WrestleMania 19.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, it was a handicap match.
That's right, it was a handicap
match. Who did he pin? Did he pin Albert or did he pin Big Show?
Didn't I tell you the weed had set in by that point? I remember WrestleMania 6 a lot better than 19. I don't
all
remember.
Right. Yeah, but
all I know is Nathan Jones. I'm sure it had to be Albert.
Yeah, it probably was.
Your boy.
yeah, that, they could have done more with Albert, and he's had a nice
career.
Yeah,
like job him out quicker.
He's had a nice career in Japan, though. What do you make of that?
Yeah, and exactly.
Giant Bernard?
Yeah, and exactly.
He's doing very good.
Yeah, Toshiaki Kawada's not walking to the door.
That much. Speaking of the 03 era, I've always said, and I commented on the show back in the day, Nathan Jones, they really, really missed out. They could have gone with the real life thing. This was a guy who actually kind of lactated a little bit out of his man boobs. You make that part of your gimmick, Kyle Ross. How do you miss on that? You know, like after he beats a guy, he lactates on him a little bit.
Obviously, no one gave Vince that idea because I can see him going through with that.
Yes, and he should have. But that's what he gets for not having me whispering these in his ear.